Last week, Amnesty International released a report called Jailed Without Justice that documents human rights abuses related to a surge in immigration enforcement and detention. It claims thousands of people have been locked up without due process, and it also alleges that 74 people have died in detention during the last 5 years, and in 2007, 322 were detained even though they may have been U.S. citizens. Joining me now are a former detainee, Hector Veloz, and Larry Cox, the executive director of Amnesty International. Welcome both of you to the show.
Thank you.
Larry, the report alleges a variety of injustices against immigrants in the United States. What do you think are the most serious problems that are outlined in this document?
I think the most serious problem is that people are being locked up sometimes for months, even years, without a chance to go before a judge who can actually determine whether they ought to be locked up, whether they represent some kind of threat to the community or a threat to flee, so that you have people who are in neither category who are being not only locked up but often treated with very harsh conditions as if they were the most serious criminals among us, when in fact they haven't committed, in many cases, they haven't committed any crime at all.
The report includes instances in which lawful permanent residents, many of whom have been residents in the United States for years or even decades, may be subject to mandatory detention. How have immigration officials justified the detention of residents who are clearly documented immigrants?
Well, I think they haven't, to our knowledge, really justified it as much as they've just said this is what the law allows us to do. I think what they've been feeding on, and one of the alarming things about this report, is that it shows that we're doing this more and more. We're locking up more people than ever before. I think the numbers have tripled since 1996. And they're doing it, I think, because of the general fear that has been generated in this country about immigrants, the demonization of immigrants, that makes it possible for them to do it. And the fact that these people often don't have, you know, the resources to mobilize, to fight it. They're very vulnerable. They're very easy to lock up.
Hector, aren't you an American citizen? Why were you detained?
Yes, I'm a U.S. citizen, and I was detained and sent to the state of Arizona from California after a short stay in California Corrections. I was picked up by ICE and flown over to Arizona and detained until I could prove that I was a U.S. citizen. When my first statement to the judge was that I was a U.S. citizen, I didn't understand why I was being detained, and he asked if I could prove it, and I said yes, I could. I brought my father's birth certificate. He is a U.S. citizen. The notice to appear stated that my father was a Mexican citizen or national of Mexico, and my mother and myself. My father's a U.S. citizen. He's a Vietnam War veteran. I showed my birth certificate and my parents' marriage certificate, and I was still put through the whole judicial process, which is a really long time. So I was detained for over 13 months.
Wow. Did you have a criminal record? Was that a problem?
Well, the only thing was I had received stolen property unknown to me. A vehicle that I had purchased was a stolen vehicle, and I did maybe one-third of the time that I had done in ICE custody for the receiving stolen property.
The reason I ask is sometimes the justification for detaining people is that they've engaged in criminal activity. Sometimes they even deport people. But you were a U.S. citizen. It shouldn't have been any different for you than it would be for me if I engaged in that activity.
Right, but my showing the proof that I am a U.S. citizen, I was still detained, and I didn't understand because I didn't really have any legal assistance. I felt like I didn't have any right to represent myself in the simple fact that why am I being detained? I'm a U.S. citizen.
What were they telling you?
That I was here illegally because I was born abroad, but the whole time I've lived in all my life here in the United States since I was 4 months old. I didn't understand why they were attempting to deport me.
Larry, is this a unique situation?
Yeah, I wish it were unique. As terrible as it is, I wish it were the only one, but it's not. We found hundreds of cases of people where more than 100 of cases of people who were probably U.S. citizens who were caught up in the same kind of nightmare that Hector has been describing. In some cases, you know, not given a real chance, and not one case of a man who was picked up in Minnesota, didn't have access to his birth certificate, had to work for many months to earn the money to pay the $30 to get his birth certificate so that he could present it to the judge.
Have Latinos been affected disproportionately?
I think they have been. That is to say that there a large number of the people being held under these conditions are Latinos, but there are also a wide range of nationalities. And they cover not only people who have come across the country without documents or who are alleged to have come across without documents, but also asylum seekers, people who are fleeing horrible conditions of torture or beatings, come to this country thinking this is a place where they'll get freedom, and are locked up and sometimes held not just for months but for years while they're trying to get asylum. Eventually, some cases they do get asylum, but they've already been held for a number of years under very harsh conditions.
You said earlier that in the last decade, I guess it's from 1996 to 2008, the number of immigrants in detention tripled from 10,000 to 30,000. Is that just totally a reflection of governmental policies, or could it also be because of increased immigration rates?
No, I think it's a question of, for example, we now know that that's 10,000 to 30,000 a day. On a yearly basis, you have maybe 300,000 people who go through this system. And we're now told that in 2009, that will have gone up to about 440,000. That's by ICE's own admission. So it's not just a question of increases in immigration. It's really a question of believing that locking people up is the best way to deal with this problem. And it's in the context of a country that already has the highest rates of incarceration of any country in the Western world.
Doesn't sound like you expect any changes in policies from the new administration.
No, actually, we do expect changes. That's why we're issuing this report. We think it can be changed. We're hopeful. There was already an op-ed piece in response to our report in the USA Today, where the deputy director for the Department of Homeland Security said that they would take this report very seriously and more or less admitted that this system is not working, that this system is broken.
But when Janet Napolitano, who is the Homeland Security Secretary, was governor of Arizona, she instituted regulations that revoked the business license of a company that knowingly hired illegal immigrants twice. That would suggest that she would want to crack down even more now that she has this new position.
Well, it's one thing to crack down on people who are you know, taking jobs who aren't entitled to them, or crack down at the border. It's another thing to be violating the basic human rights of people, many of whom, as we've described, are U.S. citizens. Many are longtime residents with families who are U.S. citizens. Many of them are asylum seekers, people that this country was created to welcome into this country. We have a case of a woman from Sri Lanka who was fleeing torture in Sri Lanka, came this country, was held for 4.5 years without ever seeing a judge to determine whether she had to be held in jail before she finally got out and was given asylum.
My guests are Larry Cox, the executive director of Amnesty International, and Hector Veloz, who was detained for, you said, 13 months, Hector?
Over 13 months, yeah, from June 2007 till the end of July 2008.
This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. And you were flown from California to Arizona. Why there?
Well, I was flown to a CCA detention facility. That's Corrections Corporations of America.
That's a private that's a private incarceration group?
Correct. That's a private institute that contracts with, I'm going to assume, DHS or ICE. And I was held there while I was put through deportation procedures.
Now, were there criminals in this prison, or was it all detainees like you?
No, actually, it used to be a board of prisoners or something like that. And up until about 2006, it changed over. But yeah, as far as being housed with criminals, I was housed with criminals, either drug dealers or whatever, all various types of criminals, and also just your regular immigrants that you know, seek work over here, or even Asians that, you know, come abroad on by ships, just a whole variety, and they're all housed together in the same atmosphere. So it's pretty stressful as far as where you're living, who you're living around, you know, the time that you have to be there, and just the way the officers treat individuals, because they're assuming you're just being deported.
Now, so, did you any of your fellow detainees have backgrounds similar to yours?
Oh, I'm going to assume some of them had a background worse than mine. You know, you're, like I said, you're in there with all types.
No, I meant, do you think that there were other U.S. citizens who were going through the same thing? Did you get together and compare notes?
Exactly. Just where I was housed, in the dormitory where I was housed, there was two other individuals. One was being one had been held for 2.5 years. His father was also a U.S. citizen, but he had passed away. He lived in San Diego, and, you know, it just took a long time for him to be able to go ahead and get released. It took 2.5 years through an appeals process, through the immigration judge, and DHS will, you know, I don't understand why, but they would appeal when the, you know, the judge's decision, even if it was in favor of the detainee, it would go through appeals, just like my case went through appeals. And I felt very violated, because I'm thinking, okay, the judge, you know, agreed that I am a U.S. citizen. He made the order to terminate the proceedings, and I was still being held. And I don't understand why, because being a U.S. citizen, or let's say if I was a legal permanent resident, where would you want to flee to? If you're staying in the United States, why couldn't you fight your case, or, you know, continue through your case in the United States?
Now, Larry, this sounds like you're guilty until you're proven innocent, and even then you probably are considered guilty, which goes against American jurisprudence. So have the courts decided on this?
Well, this is exactly right. You're exactly right. The presumption is reverse. So you're guilty until somehow you can prove that you're innocent. And what Hector just said about after the judge rules that you should get out, it being appealed and you being held much longer, that also happens rather frequently. So far, there hasn't been a court ruling. We're not appealing. We're not looking at the courts to solve this. We're looking at Congress to solve this. We're asking Congress to pass legislation that restores the presumption that people don't belong in jail unless they've done something which warrants jail.
What about housing them with criminals? Aren't immigrant detainees supposed to be kept separate from criminals?
Yeah, there are guidelines that have recently been put out by ICE that say just that. The problem is they're only guidelines. They're not a law. They're not enforceable. And one of the things we're calling for is precisely to make those not just guidelines, but to make them regulations that can't be broken. People are commingled with criminals. They are often shackled as if they were criminals, even when they're not. They're often denied medical care, and that is responsible for at least probably some of the deaths that you mentioned.
And they're not sent to federal facilities. The U.S. contracts with approximately 350 state and county criminal jails, including a lot of them private groups, to house about two-thirds of all the immigrants in detention.
That's right.
So does that break any of the rules as well?
Well, it breaks the rules if they are being treated the way I just described, and unfortunately they often are. And, I think Hector hit on it when he said, you know, these people are regarded as people who are going to be deported and kicked out, so why should we take care of them? Do they have rights at all? That's really the issue. Do these people have any rights as human beings that these local officials need to respect? And many of them act as if they don't.
Hector, were you ever given access to a lawyer?
No. Originally, when I went on my case pro se in front of the immigration judge in Eloy, Arizona, and that's when he made the ruling in my favor. I was one of the very few that was fortunate enough to have good family support to help me with whatever research that I needed via telephone, because they do have a small library, but the access to the library is a minimum. A lot of people don't understand immigration law. I didn't. I thought I could just show up, show my birth certificate, my father's birth certificate, my parents' marriage certificate, and that would get me off the hook. it didn't work out like that.
There's another, you had an advantage over some of them, I'm sure, in that you speak English.
Well, that's my first language is English. My Spanish is very broken. So my understanding of what was going on in the facility and for me to be able to comprehend that this is not right where I'm at, and some of the activities that are going on in the facility weren't appropriate because of my English and my whole comprehension is in English. I did have an advantage, and I tried to use some of my advantage to assist others if it was possible. But for the most part, even with the advantage, I was still at a disadvantage.
What about, Larry, the other people, the people who can't speak English? Don't detainees have the right to seek release by filing a petition for a writ of habeas corpus in a federal court, which might be a problem for somebody who doesn't even know what that means?
Yeah, the vast majority of people that are in this nightmare of a system have no legal counsel whatsoever.
Do they have translators available?
They do. They are supposed to have interpreters, and they do. But they don't have access to the law. They don't know what their rights are. For example, if you're detained in the U.S., you have a right to request a hearing before an immigration judge. But you have to request it. And if you're new, you don't speak the language, suddenly you're arrested and you don't know what's going to happen to you. There's no one who has an interest in telling you that you have this right. Most of them don't exercise the right. And they can be held for, as I said, months, if not years.
We have to take a little break. We'll come back with Larry Cox, the executive director of Amnesty International, and Hector Villos. We're talking about a report that was just released by Amnesty International called Jailed Without Justice. Stay with us. We're back with Hector Villos, who was detained for 13 months, even though as an illegal immigrant, even though he is a U.S. citizen, and with Larry Cox, the executive director of Amnesty International. Amnesty International has just issued a report called Jailed Without Justice, with lots of stories like Hector's.
Yeah, lots of stories, hundreds and hundreds of stories, some much worse, actually, than Hector's.
According to the report, the vast majority of people in immigration detention, 84%, are unable to obtain the legal assistance necessary to present viable claims in an adversarial and complex court process. How did you arrive at that figure?
Oh, that's a figure from that's not contested by ICE. That's a figure that comes from numerous organizations that aid, that seek to aid people who are caught up in this nightmare. It's not a controversial figure, and it's the result of having a system where people, unlike the criminal justice system, where you're required to have a lawyer, these people have no right to a lawyer. And
so ICE says this is perfectly fine?
Apparently, yes.
Hector, the report also claims that immigrant detainees may find it very difficult to get timely treatment for their medical needs. Did you have any problem along those lines?
I did personally because I had a back surgery, so I needed some physical therapy. That wasn't available for me. And probably the worst experience that I had as far as medical attention, medical needs, was at one time last spring. Everyone was out in the yard area, in the recreation area. A person fell down or fell out. I'm not sure what medical condition he had, but it took about 15 to 20 minutes before any medical staff came out to attend to him. At that time, he was already deceased. You know, myself and 200 other individuals seen him just basically die in front of everybody. The reason being is officers were telling everybody to stay away from him. You know, I knew one of the individuals, a detainee himself, went and, you know, put his shirt underneath his head to try and help him out. It seemed like he had a problem breathing and basically it was just horrible. I mean, to watch an individual die, officers telling you to not, you know, touch him, to get away. They didn't even have any kind of, whether they have or don't have, I'm not sure, as far as emergency, CPR. But they didn't do anything for him. And by the time medical staff got there, he was basically dead.
And your report, Larry, alleges that 74 people have died in detention during the past 5 years.
Yes, that's correct. And it's not, we're not claiming, of course, that every one of those deaths was a result of neglect. But we do have stories, or we do have testimony of people who, like Hector, did not receive the care they needed. We have a story of a person from Afghanistan who was locked up, who shortly thereafter began urinating blood. It took, nearly a month and a half before he got to see a doctor, and he never really got any treatment for 9.5 months. So I'm afraid that this is added to the kind of abuse that people suffer as a regular basis of being detained.
What's the average cost of detaining an immigrant?
Well, that's a very good point, because one of the things that people don't realize is not only does this abuse of a people's rights, not only is it a shame in terms of our traditions, but it costs the taxpayer hundreds of millions of unnecessary tax dollars. The average cost of detaining somebody is at a minimum $95 a day. There are alternative systems for ensuring that people come to a hearing, which is what you want, which is what you're after, that cost as little as $12 a day. So you do the math. I mean, when you multiply it by the number of people involved, it's hundreds of millions of dollars of tax money that could be better spent dealing with the problems of immigration in other ways.
A caller wants to know if most of these detention facilities are privately run.
No, I think the majority of them are not privately run.
But since they're not owned by the government, by the U.S. government, they're still paying perhaps a bit more than it would have if it was doing it all by itself.
That's right. And the trend actually is, again, this is a broader trend, but the trend is to privatize more and more of these facilities and to have outside contractors take it on.
Hector, how did you manage to get out?
Oh, interestingly enough, after the immigration judge made his order to terminate, and I went through the appeals process, and I was still detained. Then I after that, I had another hearing for a bond because the judge had made the decision that I was a citizen, so it allowed me the opportunity for a bond hearing. That was denied also, and when my case went to the Board of Immigration Appeals, the decision was also in my favor, and they released me, I believe, like 2 to 3 days prior to me receiving the decision. After I was released, I was released twice, but denied the actual release by being kept or being detained still.
And when was this, Hector?
This was last year. Year in March. The judge had made the order to terminate the proceedings. I am a U.S. citizen and was still detained. In April, I went before the bond hearing judge, and he also made the order to release me on my own recognizance hereby because I am a U.S. citizen, and that was also denied. So basically, when the first appeal was made all the way to the BIA, Board of Immigration Appeals, I was detained an extra 5 months unnecessarily because all the time it was already proven. And like they mentioned, none of my documentation was contested. Nothing was argued as far as it being incorrect documentation.
A caller wanted to know if you could have used your voter registration card. Did you have one?
No, I didn't have a voter registration card.
Now, Larry, Hector says that the courts decided more than once to release him, and yet each time that was denied. So you can just ignore what the courts say? I thought that the courts were the final word in our system.
Well, you appeal, and when you appeal, the person remains in jail. That's, again, unfortunately, Hector's story is not a unique one. We have the example I gave earlier of this woman from Sri Lanka who was applying for asylum. She was actually granted asylum after years of being in prison, being very harshly treated. She was given asylum, and then the immigration people appealed it. So she had to stay again for many, many months while she was waiting for that appeal to be heard. And finally, she was given asylum in our country.
Hector, I understand that you're currently filing an N-600. What's an N-600?
An N-600 is just a certificate of citizenship, which basically it provides the proof that I am a citizen.
Otherwise, they might be able to pick you up again and put you through this again?
I doubt that that would be possible. If I've heard of cases that have, I've actually met an individual, but he was a permanent resident who was picked up again. I've never heard of a case where a citizen has been picked up twice and put through the deportation process in the year that I was there. But I believe that if for some reason DHS would make the mistake or ICE would make the mistake of putting me through the same process, I think I would be fortunate enough to have all the documentation from the time that more than the first experience that would support it and probably, you know, be able to quickly be released. But then again, if it doesn't have, if they don't change some of the things as far as, you know, really looking into who should be detained, you know, and who should be released in order, and given the opportunity to go through whatever the judicial process is for their status or their living here. If there's no change, there's a possibility that I may be detained again.
Did you have to hire a lawyer to get you through the N-600 process?
Yeah, it's a simple form, but I did hire a lawyer just to make sure that, you know, everything would be in its correct place because, like I said, I don't know immigration law. I was able to present all of the documentation necessary to provide proof that I am a U.S. citizen, but I don't know the details in the law. And through the appeals process, I did end up retaining an attorney. And fortunately, the attorney was very helpful. But even she had told me that the steps that I had taken and in the motion that I had given forth to the judge and the courts was or should have been adequate enough. However, it wasn't.
My guests are Hector Veloz, who was detained as an illegal immigrant, even though he is a U.S. citizen, for 13 months, and Larry Cox, the executive director of Amnesty International. One of the recommendations in your report, Larry, the report called Jailed Without Justice, is that the government should ensure that alternative non-custodial measures are considered before resorting to detention. What do you mean by non-custodial measures?
Well, there are lots of ways that have been proven to be a good way to ensure that people come to a hearing without locking them up. Things like having regular visits on a weekly basis with a officer of the Immigration Service, having a telephone system set up so that they can check in on a regular basis. In some cases where there is some fear that the person may flee, of course, you can use electronic bracelets. And in all of those cases, the success rate is very, very high. The one case we looked at, or the one program we looked at, was 91% of the people showed up for the hearings as planned. So there are cheaper, very effective ways to ensure that people come to a hearing other than throwing them in jail and treating them like they're some kind of terrible criminal.
The report also states, quote, as a general rule, Amnesty International is opposed to the use of detention for the purposes of migration control. But migration, has illegal immigration, has become a big issue all throughout the world. Is the United States unique in doing this?
Well, it isn't just Amnesty International that's opposed to it. The international standards on migration that the U.S. and on refugees, asylum seekers, all say that this should be a last resort to lock people up. So
what's happening in Italy? What's happening in England? What's happening in France?
There are similar patterns of people being, subjected to this kind of treatment as the fears about migration grow around the world. We think the United States should be a leader in showing that there are better ways to deal with immigrants. We are, after all, a nation of immigrants. We should be the ones who are saying we have found a way to treat people humanely and still protect our borders.
How could these people be processed efficiently without detention?
Well, what we're calling for is that they get a hearing. That's all. A judge could still determine that someone should be locked up because there's evidence of criminal behavior or they're a threat to flee. But many, many people, if they had a hearing, it would be found that they're well established in the community. They're not going to flee. You could save many dollars of taxpayer money, and you could accomplish the same purpose humanely.
I get a lot of email from anti-immigration groups, and one of their big concerns is terrorism. And this country was a lot laxer about who it allowed in the country, and we paid the price on 9/11.
Well, that's precisely my point. That's why you need a hearing from a judge to look at whatever evidence there is. We're not in favor of people who have any kind of link to terror or any kind of link criminal behavior simply being allowed to go free. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about people who are often fleeing terror, coming to this country, thinking that they're going to be treated well because they believe in the words that are on the Statue of Liberty, and instead being treated as if they have committed one of the worst crimes one can imagine.
It's interesting to note that a caller said that if Hector was a citizen, why did this happen? What was the real cause? There is a certain sense that, well, Hector's not telling the whole story.
Unfortunately, we've looked at, as I say, it's not just one or two or three or 10, but hundreds of cases that are similar to Hector's. You have a system, any system. What's amazing is that people are generally very suspicious of the government. Suddenly, when it comes to something like this, they want the government to have all this power. The truth of the matter is every system needs checks and balances to make sure it works well. Mistakes get made all the time in the criminal justice system. That's why we have some protection. In this system, we've done away with most of the protection, and that's why these cases can happen.
An attorney called and wanted to know if it's possible for attorneys to provide pro bono services. Was that a possibility in your case, Hector?
Actually, the only legal assistance, and I'm not even sure if it'd be pro bono, but there was an organization that you can contact to try and assist you as far as finding out some of the rules or the laws that apply to individuals. And that organization was the Florence Project, where the facility where I was at. As far as pro bonos, I never heard of anybody having a pro bono attorney. Most immigration attorneys, you have to contact yourself and retain them.
There are organizations that provide pro bono help, and if someone, for example, contacts Amnesty, we put them in touch with organizations that can get them pro bono help. They're under-resourced. They're still too few, but we need more lawyers. So if there are lawyers listening who want to help, if they get in touch with Amnesty or they get in touch with some of these other organizations, we can make sure that their services are put to good use.
Last month, the government report questioned the effectiveness of a federal program called 287G, which has been criticized by immigrant advocacy groups because it deputizes police officers as immigration agents. Do you think that 287G is responsible for some of the arbitrary incarceration of immigrants?
Well, I don't think it's responsible alone, but it's part of the system. And again, what's really motivating that move and other moves is precisely this sort of kind of generalized demonization of immigrants and the feeling that the real problem we face in this country that is built on immigration is to gather people up and lock them up, and that will solve the problem.
Who arrested you, Hector?
I was arrested by ICE when I was released from custody in California.
Oh, so it was as you were leaving the prison for the because you had been accused of receiving stolen property, they arrested you?
Correct.
With the idea that they might deport you if you were proven to be an illegal immigrant?
Right, and you know, when I was detained and as I was being released, I was approached by ICE officers and said I was going to be deported. At that time, you know, that's when I asked for their names or a supervisor because I was extremely confused about why am I being deported. And I guess, you know, the main reason, the whole story behind me particularly, you know, was because of being released from prison in California. I was picked up by ICE and sent over to Arizona under the deportation process.
Now, we have very little time, but I just want to ask you one more question, Larry. On the one hand, people may assume that things will change under the Obama administration, but we also are facing incredible economic pressures these days, and that leads to a lot of anti-immigrant attitudes. Do you see any improvement ultimately?
Well, we think it will depend on what the American people do. The Obama administration has welcomed input. It's welcomed people pushing them in the right direction or in the rights direction, as we put it. And so we're urging people to get involved in our efforts to let the administration know there's a better way.
Larry Cox is the executive director of Amnesty International, which has issued a report called Jailed Without Justice. And Hector Villoz is a former detainee just released last year after being kept in detention for 13 months. Thank you for being on our show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.